One of my favorite tools I use for my business, and one that I think all nonprofits can use, is Flowdesk. They make it so easy to send out mass emails. It takes me just a few minutes, and I can send out as many as I want. Why? Because Flowdesk only uses flat pricing. That means the same fee no matter how many subscribers you have or how many emails you send. Not only that, but they have the most beautiful and easy-to-use templates to use when creating an email. It's no longer stressful or time-consuming. It also has amazing other tools like workflows and checkout for selling products, but that's a whole other podcast episode. In the meantime, go to my show notes for my link and start your free trial to check it out. Want to get half off for a full year? Make sure to use my link. Yes, that's a full year at half off. Go check it out now. Marketing for a nonprofit isn't about selling. It's about messaging. It's how we stay connected with our donors, our volunteers, and the people we serve. It's how we invite new people to become part of our mission. But sometimes it can feel never ending. There's always another post to write, another story to tell, another update to share. And while I work hard to do all things marketing, there are definitely parts I dread, like creating and scheduling content for social media, or remembering how many times I need to talk about something so people actually hear it. That's where Engie comes in. Engie feels like a marketing partner who really gets me. It helps me figure out what to say, when to say it, and how to engage my audience in a way that feels true to my brand. It even helps me write everything in my voice and puts it all together in one big calendar so I can see how it's all going to play out. I can track what's working, plan what's next, and actually feel confident about my marketing. And I love the extras, like the monthly group coaching calls with experts, the simple social media scheduler, and the AI blog writer that makes creating content so much easier. So if you're ready for marketing to finally make sense, check out the link in the show notes. Trust me, you're going to love it.
And as we were walking back to the car, I asked him if I was busy on Tuesday afternoon coming up. And I said, no, for you, you know, tell me what you need. And he says, I need you to pick me up and I need you to take me over to the cemetery so you can help me pick my final resting place.
Welcome to the Nonprofit Nook, the podcast for nonprofit leaders, board members, and community changemakers who want to build stronger, smarter organizations. I'm your host, Wendy Kidd, a longtime business owner and nonprofit leader. And I'm here to bring you real talk, real tools, and real stories to help you thrive in the nonprofit world. I'll be talking with local nonprofit leaders, community changemakers, and experts in everything from board development to fundraising and digital tools, sharing real stories and simple strategies you can actually use. Because running a nonprofit is hard, but you don't have to do it alone. Let's get started. Welcome, everybody. This is the Nonprofit Nook, and today we have Manuel Mesa, a seasoned nonprofit strategist, philanthropy advisor, and technology innovator with over 30 years of experience helping mission-driven organizations grow and thrive. Manuel is the founder and CEO of the Philanthropy Blueprint, where he helps nonprofits align their boards, data, and development strategy because passion needs structure. He's also the co-founder and COO of Benevolate, a CRM platform designed specifically for nonprofits to help them manage relationships and drive impact. Over the years, Manuel has led multi-million dollar capital campaigns, overseen major construction and renovation projects, and fundraising for organizations of all sizes, from grassroots groups to major institutions. And as the current president of the Dallas chapter of the Association of Fundraising Professionals, he's helping to shape the future of philanthropy in North Texas. Welcome, Manuel.
Thank you. Thank you for having me today, Wendy.
I'm so glad to have you. A caveat, guys, this guy's like my best friend, so we are going to have fun today. I invited Manuel to come and talk about fundraising specifically in the nonprofit area, especially because he's the president of the Dallas chapter of AFP and because he does so much work with his clients in fundraising. So I wanted him to talk a little bit about AFP today and what that is and who they serve.
Sure. Thank you. The Association of Fundraising Professionals is actually a global organization. The main headquarters is in Virginia, but there are approximately 250 chapters worldwide. And as the Dallas chapter president, I have the pleasure of serving for 2025. Prior to that, I served as treasurer for 2 years. but we help fundraisers as well as nonprofits through fundraising experiences, through conferences, webinars, monthly luncheons, as well as resources that they have available to them, either in person or online through the AFP Global website.
That's fantastic. And is this a paid membership? Do they need to pay for these events and this education, or are some of these nonprofit funded, nice, wonderful, come do this for free?
Yeah, unfortunately, most of the things are need a payment. To become a member, you need to pay. Right now, they're running a special, though, actually, AFP Global. I think it runs through the end of August or the end of August. And you get $50 discount, whether you're a first-time member or a returning member, to renew your membership. And then the luncheons are reasonable. They're only $35 for our luncheons. And then the conference itself usually runs about $295 for a day-and-a-half conference, which just took place in early June of this year.
I missed it. I so wanted to go to that. But I heard wonderful things from my nonprofit partners who did get to go to that. Who do you normally have as a member of AFP from the nonprofits? Is it normally like the fundraising director only, or do you typically have like EDs or board members or whoever?
Yeah, so mostly paid professionals, either the executive director, the director of development, whatever it might be called at their institution, as well as development associates might be members. We don't normally see volunteers lay leaders. We really encourage those individuals that are paid through the organizations, through the nonprofits, to join.
How do you stay informed about what your nonprofit partners need?
We do that in various ways. One, we send out a monthly newsletter, which they can respond to and ask for questions. Right now, we currently have 21 board members on the Dallas chapter board, and we're all accessible either by phone, email, text, and we encourage our members to reach out at any time to ask any type of question. We also have, again, resources on our own website as well as the AFP Global website that allows them to learn more. But we've also, what we've started to see is a community within a community where members of the chapter really start to gravitate towards other members. And so they learn amongst those smaller groups. And then when they really have a question that's outside of their realm, that's when they reach out to possibly a board member or AFP Global or one of our staff members at the AFP Dallas chapter.
That's so cool. I mean, honestly, that's the number one reason to join any kind of organization like this, is that building your own personal network and building those buddies that you can call and you can say, oh my gosh, this happened. What do I do? So I love that so much for them. Something that I was really intrigued with AFP, and I know you've heard me say this a million times, but I love the Donor Bill of Rights. So I want you to specifically talk about, what is the Donor Bill of Rights? How did that come into existence? How can people take advantage of that?
Yeah, the Donor Bill of Rights was actually created, I think, in the 1970s. And it was created with assistance by AFP Global, where they wanted to give the opportunity to donors, whether they were giving $5 or $5 million, the opportunity to have their own rights, to understand what type of organization they're giving their dollars to. So, for example, if I'm giving an organization a $10,000 gift, I need to understand what my rights are. Are those $10,000 truly being used in the support that I anticipate it to be done? So for example, if I give a $10,000 check to an organization and they tell me it's about to support the capital campaign that they're embarking on, and I find out that those $10,000 are actually being utilized to pay payroll, That is part of the Bill of Rights. It's you're misleading your donors, and it's really important for donors to understand that they have rights. We've also started to see a real change. I would say starting around COVID, donors are becoming more sophisticated. They're really trying to understand where their dollars are going. They also want to understand the percentage of every dollar that is actually going towards the mission versus what is covering everyday expenses of the nonprofit. So for example, the goal is that if someone donates a dollar, at least 70 to 80 cents of that dollar is actually going towards the mission. And then the balance is to help offset, you know, payroll, infrastructure, if you have a building, things like that. And we definitely encourage every nonprofit organization to post their Bill of Rights, the Donor Bill of Rights, and encourage donors to ask about it. The other good thing about that, it allows you as a nonprofit to learn more about your donor, learn about their sophistication when it comes to their gift. Not only that, but if they feel comfortable with your answers, those are individuals that are going to give again and again.
Absolutely. It's so important to honor what their intent was for that money. And I think that, you know, one of the things that nonprofits are not so great at is communication. And once they get into the habit of communicating with their donors and being more transparent, instead of being scared of that conversation, I think they'll find that that actually leads to a much better relationship, which in turn does mean more money in the long run, right?
Correct. Yeah. You know, it's always good to be in communication with your donor, whether it's good news or bad news. Yeah. You want to be honest with them, right? Listen, we're all human. We're all going to make mistakes. But if you're upfront with your donors and you let them know what's happening, again, like you just said, they might be willing to write you another check because you are being upfront with them. You're being honest and you're informing them, hey, we're in a bit of trouble, right? And you've been a longtime supporter. Could you help us a little bit more right now?
Absolutely. And I think it's also important to talk about your operating expenses and why it's important to contribute towards that too, not just the mission. So I think people are scared to ask for that. And I think I see a lot of people who are scared of that because things like grants don't typically cover operating expenses. But you and I both know operating expenses go to the people who are providing the services. And that, to me, is the most valuable money in any organization that they can get. And the more you have a better relationship with donors, the more they understand that about those operating expenses, and they're more willing to donate towards those too.
That is correct. They're also willing to open up their network to you.
Yeah.
Right? So yeah. If you are identifying individuals that you consider a major donor at $10,000 per gift, and they have a network of 50, 60 people, and they introduce you to even 10% of those, right? So now you have 5-6 new donors potentially at a level of whether it's $0 to $10,000 or possibly more, and they feel comfortable in making those introductions on your behalf to their network.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Now, I know that you have a success story or two because you've worked with so many people in helping them tread these waters. I want you to give a little shout out to some of the people who've done really well with your advice.
Yeah, so on a personal level, I've been an executive director of 3 synagogues on the East Coast of the United States, and I've been really fortunate to meet hundreds of individuals that are just amazing. Whether they're large donors or not, they're just amazing individuals. But I had this one individual. I am going to use a different name just so that, out of respect to his family, although he's no longer living. So we'll call this individual Sam.
Sam, it is.
So I met Sam at a synagogue. I was hired by a synagogue as the executive director, and I was informed that not only did I need to lead the synagogue itself, we were also going to start a construction project as well as a capital campaign that they had started and stopped twice. We were going to re-engage that capital campaign. And they wanted me to meet Sam immediately because they wanted Sam to donate $1 million, right?
Yeah.
So I went back and I said, okay, how is Sam involved, right? So at this point, when I met Sam, Sam was in his late 80s. He was not involved. He did not come to the synagogue very often, if at all. And there was really no way that I was going to pick up the phone and call Sam and say, hey, Sam, could you give me $1 million?
Yeah.
Right?
That's not going to work.
Sam was going to hang up on me. So what I did was I sent my president and vice president, and I asked them to give Sam an update as to where the synagogue is and what the plans for the future are for the next 3 to 5 years. Now, Sam being a very sophisticated donor at the time, he, at the end of the conversation, he said, so aren't you going to ask me? And the board member said, ask you what? And he said, aren't you going to ask me for a donation? And unfortunately, they didn't ask for a donation. But what they did say is, Manuel instructed us not to ask you for a donation. So all that it being said, it went well. And I followed up with Sam and sent him a note and said, I'd love to meet you, pick you up for lunch, and let's get to know each other. So one of the things that I really enjoyed through this relationship is that I feel I got more from the relationship than Sam did. Sam was born, he was alive during the Great Depression. We got to talk about that. We got to talk about his time serving in the military, as well as what it was like, what was life like for him, right, growing up during the Great Depression, because his family was actually very successful already, and they were actually giving out bread during while people were in the bread line. So they didn't feel the pinch of the Great Depression. So I spent approximately the next six to seven months getting to know Sam. I'd pick him up once a month, had the pleasure of picking him up, taking him to his favorite restaurants. And we would eat, we would talk. I would give him updates about the synagogue. And then I really got to understand what he was looking for. And what he was looking for was a return on investment for his donation, right? He didn't want to just donate and it was going to cover this, this, and this. He really wanted us to be able to make money in return for his investment. So what I went to him and I said, why don't you help us beautify the ballroom, which is already named in your family name. And at the same time, let's upgrade the kitchen. And with that, we can generate revenue over time. And so I did that, I think, in my seventh month getting to know him. And I'm happy to report that before I left that organization, to my understanding, he donated a little over $1.5 million.
Wow.
To help beautify that space and in return generate ongoing revenue for the organization. And again, I got so much more from Sam than I think I gave to him, but it was a true pleasure to get to spend so much time with him.
That is so cool. I love that. I wish I could know Sam. But that's the thing, right? You just got to get to know people and get to know what their interest is and speak to that interest.
Yeah.
So.
And by the way, you know, I always encourage fundraisers not to see individuals as piggy banks, right? They're right. Human beings. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I learned through Sam is really that. And just one final piece on Sam. I gave him a private tour one Sunday afternoon of a new piece of a new part of the building that we were building out. And I did it on purpose on a Sunday because I didn't want him to be bombarded by individuals. Again, he didn't spend a lot of time in the space, in the synagogue. And he never had a biological children. He had three stepchildren. One of his sons drove him, and he took the tour with us. And as we were walking back to the car, Sam asked me if I was busy on Tuesday afternoon coming up. And I said, no, for you, you know, tell me what you need. And he says, I need you to pick me up and I need you to take me over to the cemetery so you can help me pick my final resting place.
Oh, wow.
So I looked at him. I said, are you sure you're not talking to Michael? And he goes, no, I want you to do that. That's the kind of friendship that we've created. And I took him and we spent some time touring and he picked a final resting place for him and his wife, who was already unfortunately sick and didn't, I want to say she passed within about 6 to 8 months after that time.
Wow. What an honor. What an honor.
Yeah.
Is that like the favorite thing of your job? I mean, I know you do so many things. What's the favorite thing you get to do?
Asking for money.
Not what I thought you were going to say.
Asking for money and getting to know people.
Yeah.
Really. It's a true pleasure. You know, the people come with so many different stories. How did they make their wealth? How do they spend their wealth? Who do they want to give it to? And during that time, you get to really get to know them and you get to see the real person.
Yeah.
And again, for me, they're not piggy banks. They really aren't. Because, you know, my goal one day is to be on the other side of that, you know, have someone asking me for a donation. And I want them to really know who I am and what I believe in.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. What do you wish nonprofits understood more?
There's a lot. But I would say one of the first things is to make sure that your organization is donor-centric. Make sure that you focus on the donor. What does the donor need and want from the organization, right? Not every donor is going to give money, but they might give time. They might open up their network of individuals or corporations or foundations mm-hmm. to you, right? I'm not saying you have to be their best friend, but you need to know your donor, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not just when you need them. You need to always be there for your donor.
Yeah.
That's one thing that I have learned working at synagogues. I've had donors that have given to the organization, have served as board members, and have passed away. And I think at that point, when I'm there to at the funeral as the executive director, helping making sure that the ceremony goes off without a hitch and making sure that they get to their final resting place is important and is more of important than even getting that donation. Mm-hmm. Now, most fundraisers are never going to get to that point, right? Unless you're an ED of an organization like that. But fundraisers need to understand that donors are human beings, just like we are. And you need to make sure that you're giving them the ample feedback and time that they deserve.
Sure, sure. What's the number one thing nonprofits can do to be more successful in fundraising? I know you said donor-centric was the thing they need to understand more, but what can they do? What's an action step?
Communication, right? And yeah. I don't mean mass emails every month that say the same things, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of the ways you can do that is segment your communication. So if you have 100 donors, 10 of them are your top donors, how do you communicate with them mm-hmm. versus how do you communicate with someone who gives you $25 a month on a monthly giving program? So understand your audience, understand your donors, making sure you're also having contact, not just with your major donors, but your monthly donors. It's been proven that individuals that give on a monthly basis actually can be asked again and sometimes become your largest donors. Because if you're giving monthly, that's sometimes a larger commitment than giving a one-time gift.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. I think that you're giving me more ideas for another podcast episode. Levels of communication. Okay. All right. Well, I know we're running out of time here, but I want to cover a couple more things. So how can people get involved with AFP and learn all these skills when it comes to fundraising?
Yeah. So getting involved at AFP is absolutely the easiest thing to do. Just go to our website. It's afpdallas.org, I believe. And you can go ahead and you'll see upcoming events. Our next one is in August. We have a great speaker, a past president of our chapter, as well as a fundraiser, I believe, with at least 20 years of experience. And she'll be giving some great updates, as well as there's an opportunity to network before the luncheon. At the same time, you can reach out to our AFP Dallas headquarters. Essentially, we have two individuals that work for us part-time, and they will answer any questions. But you can also go to afpglobal.org, and you can find your local chapter if you're not in the Dallas area. I definitely recommend also looking at the Fort Worth chapter. My counterpart there, Hillary, is an absolutely amazing young lady. We do a lot of work together. We actually text on a weekly basis to commiserate.
as presidents.
As
yes.
presidents. So, but yeah, that's really the easiest way. And by the way, if you're not a member of the chapter, you can still attend a luncheon. If you can't afford it, we'll be happy to cover it for you, because we really want you to get that experience and get that opportunity to network with other fundraisers that are in the same field that you are.
That's awesome. Any particular social media channels that AFP is on that they can follow your good works?
Yeah, all of them. LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook. But I would say that LinkedIn is our biggest following. Mm-hmm. And you can look us up either for the Greater Dallas chapter or, again, AFP Global. And when you go to AFP Global, I think they have like 400,000 followers, which is absolutely amazing. And you can find them there.
Okay. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you wanted to mention while you're here?
I just want to mention that I think this is a great opportunity, your podcast. I really, really appreciate being one of your first guests. I hope I did a good job.
I think you did a great job.
and really, you know, can we promote the July? Oh, that'll be after the fact.
Yeah, that'll be after this. After so the fact. If anybody came to the North Texas Giving Day workshop in July, thanks for coming. And you'll see Manuel there as well. So yeah. Thanks for joining us. But hopefully we'll have other educational events on the calendar soon. Definitely got a couple ideas already in the hopper for September. So we'll be talking about that soon.
For sure. For sure.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Manuel. It was so much fun having you as one of my first guests.
Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity, Wendy.
All right. Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Nonprofit Nook. We're building better nonprofits together. If you found today's episode helpful, please subscribe, leave a review, and share it with other nonprofit leaders who need support. Follow the Nonprofit Nook on social media and sign up for our email list for extra tips and updates. You can also visit thenonprofitnook.com to see the show notes and leave a comment telling me what topics you want next. Your feedback shapes the show. See you next time.